The reading this morning is something that you may have had a chance to preview. It's a portion of a letter that I sent out in the e-fuse, and I posted it on Facebook. It's been everywhere this week. But this is just a small piece of that letter, written by a minister who serves our congregation in Brooklyn, New York. Do we religious liberals experience a tension between our religious values and the values of the secular world? If not, why not? It seems to me that there should be enormous tension. We should feel this tension in every decision that we make. When we shop at the grocery store, when we go to work, when we speak to a child, when and if we watch TV. The question of to what extent and in what ways we should participate in the dominant culture should keep us up at night. Until our theological ideals are realized on this earth, until we live in societies of boundless compassion, where no one is excluded from the tables of abundance, until we lovingly care for all creatures of the earth, until violence and hunger are relics of the past, religious liberals should not feel at ease in this world. If we do, there is a problem. As Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. wrote, there are some things in our social system to which all of us ought to be maladjusted. I would argue that not only should we be maladjusted, but we should actively engage this maladjustment in forming the foundation of a religious counterculture. What if we could restore the radical edge and dynamic energy of religious liberalism? What would the world look like if, instead of advertising religion light, religious liberals became the most observant people around? What if those of us who consider ourselves theologically liberal began joining liberal religious community in droves? What if we began tithing to those institutions? What if we observed a Sabbath together and radically disengaged from social and economic structures every week? What if we engaged in serious study of our spiritual texts and heritage and applied their lessons to the issues of today? What if we began lobbying on religious grounds for environmental stewardship? The sky is the limit in reimagining how our faiths call us to practice in the modern world. Can you imagine a religious community, a religious life, like the one that Reverend Anna Levy Lyons describes in the reading? She charges us to build a counterculture in our liberal congregations. And I think she's talking about a spiritually grounded, emotionally vibrant, intellectually challenging resistance to what is around us that does not make sense. Many of you have already articulated that today. But it's things like the fact that we are often too busy to sit down and have a meal together, whether that's people in their homes or us as a congregation. That profit comes before compassion so often. That we can get people to the moon, but we cannot figure out how to feed people in our own town. That we choose economic prosperity and keeping our energy system the same over the well-being of the planet. I want our congregation to be part of this restoration that she talks about, this restoring of the radical edge and the dynamic energy of religious liberalism. So I thought, well, how do you go about that? How do you get that energy to be big enough that it starts to move out into the world? Whether you are a liberal religious congregation in the United Church of Christ tradition, or whether you are part of a Reform Jewish synagogue or a Unitarian Universalist congregation. I think it's these four things. Being a place where we can talk about anything. Being a place where each person has a spiritual practice. Being a place of collective action in the world. And being a place of ultimate hope. I'll talk about the first two of these today and the second two next week. I want this congregation to be a place where we can talk about anything. The big questions, the little joys and sorrows, the fears, the coffee, the assumptions, the old stories, the new ones, anything. I think that being a liberal religious community means that our lives and our spiritual truths are open to reinterpretation. I think that's the essential meaning of being liberal. And in order to be reinterpreted, we have to be ready to talk about anything, have to be able to talk about anything. To be able to actually talk with each other about this big scope of things means that we have to learn to listen with great care and respect to everyone, to learn to hear what people are saying, what they're not saying, and what's under the words. It also means that we have to learn to expect that other people will listen to us, that our lives and our thinking are part of the story. And for our community to be whole, each of us can expect to be listened to with care and respect. I said it last week, and I'll say it again, that listening to each other does not mean that we will then agree with each other. That's not the point of listening. The point is to recognize each other's humanity, to hear our vulnerabilities, and to think together and see what happens when we honestly exchange what we've each got inside. So if you're going to talk about everything and not always agree, then we have to learn to not take everything personally. I can just barely stand to listen to the news from Capitol Hill anymore. Everyone is so busy declaring how offended they are, how disappointed they are, how righteous they feel about their own position. And I keep thinking about writing them all a little letter. Dear elected officials, it's not about you. Perhaps I'll write that letter after today. They have gotten very busy reacting and busy being attached to getting things to be just the way they seem to think they want them to be. And they've stopped thinking about the fact that we're all in this soup together. No one has the whole story. And we have to work together. We live in a culture that discourages listening to each other and encourages us to take everything personally and to react to every perceived slight. It is deeply spiritual work to decide to listen, to decide to be heard, to decide that at the same time that your participation is vital, there is no need to take each part of it personally. And we are doing some wonderful and interesting things in this regard already. One of the places that I am proud of this congregation and of our liberal religious tradition is that we offer the Our Whole Lives Sexuality Education Program. It's a program that was developed with one of our liberal religious cousins, the United Church of Christ. And it's called Our Whole Lives because, in fact, it offers workshops and classes for people across the entire age spectrum. If you're alive, there is a curriculum available from the UUA about sexuality. So far, we offer it for our junior high youth at this point. And it's spectacular. They talk about the big stuff. They talk about some of the basic biology. They talk about the intangibles of identity, longings, relationships. I took the 1980s version of Our Whole Lives, and I still remember not only each person who was in that class with me and the teachers who I am still very fond of, but some of the moments both of shock and insight that I had learning about sexuality at that moment in life. And it serves me well to this day. And I love the implicit message that we give our youth when we teach them about sexuality and relationships in church. To say that this is connected to your closest relationships, to your spiritual life, that these things are good and part of life, and that we want you to have a deep understanding of this and have it be integrated deeply into who you are. We care about your whole life that much, is what teaching that curriculum to our youth says to them. And there are adult sessions of Our Whole Lives, and more than one person in this congregation has said, wouldn't it be great to offer that here? Let's do it. There's a training coming up this spring. Let's take another step toward this being a place where we can talk about anything with each other. That curriculum is so wonderful because it gives great structure to holding on to that conversation. You can't just talk about anything anywhere all the time where it gets, well, you know how it gets. But if it's structured and held well, you can talk about anything. Several of the groups who meet in our congregation use guidelines for being together that remind us to listen and take turns hearing each other. Several of you did trainings a few years ago about how to use those guidelines well. What if we offered that training? It's a 12-hour training. What if we offered it every year so that it becomes part of how we are together, that we listen carefully? I'll save this next story for next time and just tell you that it's titled, Quit Pointing Your Avocado at Me. It's a story from a blog about parenting. So we'll talk about pointy avocados next week. This learning to listen, this learning to not take things personally, is part of what Alan Watts talked about as overcoming the social training about who is better and who is worse, about having a practice in which we are present as ourselves. So if we're going to have a place where we talk about everything, where we listen deeply and don't take it personally, we'll need at least two things. Lots of laughter and play together, and grounding spiritual practices. I would like our liberal religious communities, this one in particular, of course, to be a place where every person has a spiritual practice. Everyone. And Facebook is not a spiritual practice. It can, of course, fall into the laughter and play part. But a liberal religious community that has a radical edge and a dynamic energy is a place where each person has to be grounded in their own spiritual journey. I want becoming part of this community to include finding your spiritual practice or deepening the one that you arrive with. It could be meditation, it could be yoga, it could be a prayer practice. It could be that baking bread is your spiritual practice. It just needs to have a degree of discipline and constancy. Now, I have a baby at home. I work full time. Believe me, I know that it is hard to maintain a practice. And the point isn't to try to be perfect about it or to feel bad about it. The point is that part of being a spiritual person, being in a religious community, is to have a practice that you return to again and again. And that part of that getting back to it again is the struggle that helps us grow. There is something that happens in the mind and the body, and in every relationship you have, that changes when you have a practice that you commit yourself to. And then you miss a week or a month, and then you return. What if we all supported each other in growing toward that? In a non-judgmental way, what clarity could we gain for our own lives, for each other, for the world around us? When I get myself to yoga and watch my mind as my body works, I have a sense of who I am that is deeper than words, and I meet the world differently. And when that can happen, and I do manage to meditate for even 5 minutes a day, every day for a week, I'm pretty sure that you can tell. I maintain my equilibrium more effectively. I'm more present. I'm more pleased with everything. I'm more willing to have my heart broken and more willing to just love everybody. For Pete Seeger, you know, his practice was singing. He lived in his practice. He said, "My job is to show folks that there's a lot of good music in the world. And if used right, it may help to save the planet." Pretty good summation of being in your practice, engaging the world, and holding it lightly. Some of the practices that we share here on these Sunday mornings are the kinds of practices that I hope we'll have, and singing together is certainly one of those. We share meditation together. We engage in careful listening on Sunday mornings. We've had meditation and Tai Chi and yoga groups on and off here over the years. We've had writing groups on and off over the years. We have a knitting group. I don't know if the knitting group is thinking of themselves as a spiritual practice group, but I think in some ways they are. I want to read you a few words from a Reform Jewish meditation and prayer manual. Religion is not merely a belief in an ultimate reality or an ultimate ideal. Those beliefs are worse than false. They are platitudes, truisms that no one can dispute. Religion is a momentous possibility. The possibility, namely, that what is highest in spirit is also deepest in nature. Something akin to us, a conserver and increaser of values. That the things that matter most are not at the mercy of the things that matter least. I will talk about collective action and ultimate hope next week. In the meantime, I hope that you will talk with me about this. shift in liberal religious tradition, and maybe more importantly, talk with each other about it. Coffee Hour, of course, offers your first chance for that conversation, but I hope you will seize many other chances this week to talk to each other about what you think about this, how it challenges you, how you think it makes sense, how you think it doesn't make any sense at all. Start this practice of talking about anything.